It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I think we're doing very well. Our economy is doing great. We're having a little spat with China, and we'll win it. We put a lot of tariffs on China today. As you know, they put some on us. We put a lot on them. We're up to about $550 billion. They've been hitting us for many, many years for over $500 billion a year, taking out of our country much more than $500 billion a year. So we want that stopped, okay?
That's the president as he was getting ready to board the plane to go to the G7 conference in France. Lots has been happening over the weekend. Big news this morning, but I'm actually not going to tell you yet, so just hang on. Kevin Cork gave a report this morning from the G7 summit, and I thought, you know, they're busy working while we're sleeping. So this is we're waking up this morning to find out what is actually happening at the G7. And so I'll let Kevin tell you just the nuts and bolts before I weigh in. Let's listen.
What a wild morning already here at the G7. We woke up expecting this to sort of be an eventful day, but you never know if you'll get real breaking news. And we certainly got that this morning as the president once again is talking about more trade interaction with China, and the Chinese are ready to talk. So, yeah, time to talk, time maybe to make a deal. And that would be of a major benefit for the entire globe. In fact, we heard from the Chinese, their vice premier, who made it really obvious that the Chinese would like to get back to the negotiation table and they'd like to do so calmly. Let me share part of a statement. This is from Li Hua. And the Chinese, again, are just saying all the right things right now. Now, the real question is, will that ultimately pay dividends? He said this: China is willing to resolve its trade dispute with the United States through calm negotiations and resolutely opposes the escalation of the conflict. Now, that escalation, of course, blew out the markets on Friday, right? After the Chinese hit the U.S. with $75 billion in new tariffs on U.S. imports. Then the Trump administration, after the closing bell, retaliated with new levies set to hit some $550 billion in Chinese imports.
China called last night our top trade people and said, let's get back to the table. So we'll be getting back to the table. And I think they want to do something. They've been hurt very badly, but they understand this is the right thing to do. This is a very positive development for the world.
Positive development for the world, says the president. Those comments, by the way, coming during a summit in which he's already announced a major trade deal with Japan. He's also offered to boost the UK economy with a massive trade pact in the wake of what looks like a very likely no-deal Brexit coming up in October.
Yeah, that's just part of the report. Now, so he did actually give you the punchline, but I'm going to save it again. I'm going to clarify in a second. I want to give more detail about what's been happening. The Chinese, of course, slapped a pretty sizable tariff on us the end of last week, and the stock market went way down on Friday again. President Trump responded by lifting the tariffs starting October 1st from 25% to 30% on China. And then also added tariffs on another $300 billion of Chinese goods, which was to take effect on September 1st. And that would be now 15% tariffs instead of 10%. And let me go back and also put this in perspective. The president has said, you know, ever since he was campaigning, he talked about China all the time and how out of control they were. And we've known that. Those of us on the close to what's happening in D.C. understand that. I just don't think the American people do, because we've been enjoying cheap goods, easy access, you know, great shopping. We've been enjoying that for so many years. The free trade has brought us a glut of stuff at cheap prices, clothing prices, everything. The Chinese are masters. Honestly, they're such good workmen. They really are. They make wonderful things. But of course, at the same time, they've been stealing from us. Intellectual property, stuff to make weapons, which now they are aiming at us building up their military. It's become very dangerous. And people, jobs have been lost here in the United States, manufacturing jobs. Companies have rushed to build, you know, entities, branches of their business overseas. You know that. You know all of this. So the president kind of put it this way. He said they have been stealing our intellectual property. The theft has been anywhere from $300 billion to $500 billion a year. And we have totally lost almost $1 trillion a year for many years. And I can tell you this started with George Herbert Walker Bush. That's as far back as I can remember. And certainly the Clintons were scoundrels dealing with China. Took money from them, sold, you know, for their own benefit, some of our military secrets. This is on record. They had a contact, Johnny, I can't remember his last name, but he was a Chinese contact that they had. This is one of the many things the Clintons have done through the years. Okay, so this happened on Friday then. The Chinese retaliate, and then the president comes back even more strong and slaps more tariffs on them. Meanwhile, the press, of course, is reporting this like the president is crazy. Brett Stevens was on, I think it was MSNBC, and he had this to say about the president. This is clip six.
The real issue for Republicans is simply to call out the fact that the president does not stand in any way for the traditional conservative economic principles that have defined the party for the better part of the last 70 years. They don't even stand, never mind the economic principles, broader principles of character. I mean, what we saw over the last few days is a president who is either mentally unwell or morally unfit. Maybe both. I don't know. But it's important to simply call these things as we see them. You have behavior that is unprecedented in any kind of presidential history in the United States or frankly elsewhere. So when I hear guys like Eric say, well, you know, this is at the end of the day, this is a choice. You know, I'd actually rather have a candidate on the Democratic side who at least doesn't scare me every single morning.
That's Brett Stevens, and that was CNN. Sorry, I got that wrong. Okay, CNN. So this is their spin on it. The president's crazy. He's erratic. That's what they're reporting. The reporters in a pool ask him if he had second thoughts about his policy with China, and he said, every day I have second thoughts. And they took that as like, he's unstable. He says so many unstable things. And yet, what we know is that the U.S. economy is the strongest in the world. That the leaders at the G7 summit actually are looking to us. Boris Johnson, who just got elected, the Prime Minister of England, is looking to us to help him as the Britain leaves the EU. The EU is contracting. The German economy is contracting. China's economy is contracting. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. And so I heard from someone over the weekend that the truth is that the Chinese have great respect for President Trump, and they are afraid of him. Maybe that's Trump supporters speaking out, right? Well, the truth is, this morning we heard, and you heard that you heard Kevin Cork just say this a few minutes ago. The Chinese just this morning are saying that they want a calm ending to their trade war with the U.S. It's kind of like their crying uncle, no question about it. They want to make a deal. The news of the possible opening in negotiations came shortly after President Trump threatened to declare a national emergency that would result in American businesses freezing their relationships with China. Trump's tariff barrage on Friday was a response to China imposing its own retaliatory tariffs on $75 billion in U.S. goods. Chinese Vice Premier Li He told a state-controlled newspaper on Monday that, quote, China is willing to resolve its trade dispute with the United States through calm negotiations and resolutely opposes the escalation of the conflict. Well, there's a good reason for that, because the stocks in China are tumbling. Businesses are pulling out, and the currency has been devalued. And so China is in trouble. The president has really pressed them to the wall, and they are caving. Now, here's the problem that I see, honestly. The problem is I see the president doing some really great things. I see him resolving and stating that he's going to do some very, very hard things. And then sometimes he caves too quickly. He does a mea culpa too quickly himself. So we'll see. If he continues his hard line with China, we might be able to actually, unbelievably, after all these decades of them abusing us in so many ways and becoming really a danger to the world, it could be that we could actually break them in the right way and then come about, resolve this so that we have an interesting but fair and equitable trading partnership with them. And yes, it will mean that you and I will pay more for goods and services. And that's the price of safety for the world and for us and for future generations. So, President Trump tweeted this morning, "In France, we are all laughing at how knowingly inaccurate the U.S. reporting of events and conversations at the G7 is. These leaders and many others are getting a major case study on fake news at its finest. They've got it all wrong, from Iran to China tariffs to Boris." And, of course, he's talking about the fact that President Macron invited a leader from Iran, not as part of the G7 because he doesn't have the power to include him in that, but he is there kind of on the sidelines, and that is a slap in our face. France just persists on continuing the Iranian deal. I think a lot of it has to do with their energy supplies. Don't ask me to explain that. French businessmen are deeply involved with Iran, and it's all about money and business deals. And so France is still including Iran and, of course, fighting to keep that Iranian deal going. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but that's what's happening. And this morning, and just I want to repeat that China has caved. They're saying, "Oh, no, we want to talk. Let's talk. Oh, now can we talk?" And so they could say the president is crazy all they want, and they certainly do, and they certainly will. But those are the results of our crazy president at the G7 summit. Now, Pete Marici is an economist, and he sort of put this in perspective. Let's listen to clip 5.
"Unfortunately, Presidents Bush, Clinton, Obama all enabled China by being lenient with them, overlooking their violation of WTO rules, letting them steal American technology and so forth. And what have they done with all the money they've earned or stolen? Basically, they've built a blue water navy that intimidates its neighbors. It's just a travesty. We shouldn't be building up China. We should disengage. There's plenty of other places to get cheap labor and to trade and so forth in Asia. But it's going to take time to unwind these things. And I wouldn't say that just simply ordering companies to do it isn't going to work. But rather, these tariffs make sense. You know, you want to see democratic hypocrisy. You were talking about the borders. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton ran on a 25% tariff. Barack Obama promised to do something about it. And Paul Krugman, in his column, recommended that President Obama impose a 25% tariff. Just a few weeks ago, he's condemning President Trump for doing it. You know, it's really terrible that this is becoming a partisan issue. China is the enemy of our time. This is the moment we have to get behind President Trump on this. We always had this notion that if we traded with China, brought them into commerce and so forth, that they would gradually become a liberal democracy.
Bingo.
That communism would evaporate. Well, that failed. It simply failed. And now what are they talking about? Well, they're talking about, well, we need to go back to negotiating with China. President Bush negotiated with China. President Obama negotiated with China. And President Trump, now here he's at fault. Twice he's let President Xi lure him into negotiations instead of adopting punitive measures. You know, we had the Mar-a-Lago initiative, which used up a year of his administration. And then when he was about to get tough, President Xi persuaded him again to negotiate it. And this last May, we had a deal. Xi was supposed to sign it. And what did he do? What Chinese leaders have always done with Americans. Basically jolly us along and in the end, either sign an agreement that they won't honor or simply walk away. The bottom line is President Xi doesn't keep his word. Simply
all right, I'm
going
to interrupt. But that, listen, that's just interesting. I wanted to give you as much perspective as possible. By the way, I heard over the weekend from someone in Hong Kong that President Xi's wife, the president of China, that his wife is a Christian. Let that soak in. I had not heard that. And the Hong Kong protesters, by the way, continue to protest. The police actually shot a gun up in the air to disrupt the crowd. But those protests continue. My inside source tells me that the Chinese government is afraid of these protesters. It's intriguing. It really is intriguing. All right, when we come back, another intriguing story. So don't touch that dial. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. If you're a pastor's wife, come be encouraged and renewed as we talk about the challenges and stresses unique to pastors and their wives.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming October 8th through 10th to Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. The retreat is 3 days and two nights of relaxation and building relationships. Our hosts will be Pastor Bert Harper, Director of Marriage, Family, and Pastoral Ministries, and co-host of Exploring the Word on AFR, and his wife, Jan. And our special speakers will be J.J. Jasper and Abraham Hamilton III. Lodging, meals, and materials are included in your registration. But hurry, space is limited. Register today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 300. That's 800-326-4543, extension 300. Or at repairingthefoundations.net.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat. We'd love to see you there.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Harvey Pratt, a forensic artist with more than 40 years' experience working with law enforcement on high-profile cases in the United States. Romans 12:6 reminds us of our individual talents we receive from God. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we thank you for the gifts of talent you have given to Harvey Pratt and ask for your continued guidance in his work in law enforcement. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Volume 4 of our daily prayer journal is now available. To receive your copy, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A federal judge cracks down on church music. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Jesus just got banned from a South Carolina school district. Federal Judge Bruce Hendricks issued an order against the Greenville County School District banning school-sponsored prayers, religious songs, and the use of religious venues at public school graduations. The order is the culmination of a six-year legal battle between the American Humanist Association and the school district. I spent the past year researching these stealth attacks to eradicate Christianity. My findings are published in my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. I would encourage you to pre-order a copy because the court ruling in South Carolina, well, it's just the tip of the iceberg, folks. The idea that a school choir cannot perform the Lord bless you and keep you, or a child cannot invite people to pray, that's flat out Christ shaming. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And look, I don't say I've never heard anything like this very often, but I've never heard anything like this. The CEO of Overstock, we all know that company. I mean, the latest market cap is like $745 million. And that's after it had a couple of rough years here. He resigned today, but he says it's not about the business. We'll talk to him about all of this. He's waiting. He's standing by right now. He says he didn't want to get the company tangled up with certain government matters. Like what? What is he involved in? He says he had a romantic relationship with the accused Russian agent, Maria Butina. You've heard that name. You've seen her face with the red hair a million times. He says that he wasn't just involved with her and someone had to tell him about it. He says the government knew, and that the government was encouraging him in ways that he wasn't even comfortable with, and that it reached into the election, and that he knows things about what was done by our government regarding Hillary Clinton and our president. Now, what does the U.S. government say? A U.S. official tells CNN that Mr. Byrne did share information with them concerning the early days of the Russia investigation in a meeting earlier this year with officials there. They found aspects of the story to be believable. Why? Because he shared operational details that were not widely known. We haven't heard from the FBI. We're reaching out to them. The DOJ didn't want anything to us about this yet, but we're reaching out. We're covering our bases. Patrick Byrne is not just some righty fringe player. This guy ran a real company, and he's known in this country.
Well, that's Andrew Cuomo on CNN, and that's just his little bit of introduction before he introduces Patrick Byrne. Now, you probably heard about this last week, but in case you didn't, you need to. Overstock is a huge company. I've bought lots of things from Overstock over time. They have some great products, but I had no idea who their CEO was or anything about him. But now we're certainly learning because he abruptly resigned Thursday and has been telling an incredible story. He's been all over television telling the story of how the FBI, not just the FBI, but people higher than the FBI, recruited him to get a Russian operative named Maria Butina involved in the Trump campaign primarily. It's not as clean as that. There's machinations, but eventually it was the Trump campaign to try to insert herself in that and get information. And now as Patrick started watching, seeing what was developing in the news, he realized that these government sources or government agents were trying to get him to be a major part of entrapping President Trump and anyone related to his campaign. Now, that's a very simple telling of it. It's a lot more complex than that. And I'm going to do my best to tell you about it because it really is amazing. Now, as Andrew said, Overstock is a huge company. And Patrick Byrne was mentored by Warren Buffett since he was a teenager. And he says that after he realized from watching the news, in fact, I'll read this to you. He says, in July, I came forward to a small set of journalists regarding my involvement in certain government matters. Doing so was not my first choice, but I was reminded of the damage done to our nation for 3 years, and I felt my duty as a citizen precluded me from staying silent any longer. One of his other motivations was that he did enter into a relationship with this Russian, Maria Butina, a human relationship with her, and she ended up being convicted by Robert Mueller and his team and harshly treated during the trial. They actually refused some defensive information, gave her the harshest of treatment. She's in jail, in prison. She was placed in solitary, and he was very upset and guilt-ridden about whatever part he played in that, because although Maria may not be guiltless in terms of her dealings, her relationships with oligarchs in Russia, her intent to be here independently of any Russian collusion. She's working for oligarchs. Oligarchs are not the government in Russia. They're independent, I guess, businessmen, you could say, but that's kind of a darker side to being an oligarch. And so she didn't necessarily have good intentions, but it wasn't about, you know, Trump, and it wasn't about trying to take down the country. She's actually a Second Amendment gun supporter and was trying to start a Second Amendment group in Russia. It's a very interesting story. So they accused her of not registering as a foreign agent. And now you remember that is a charge that's a very old law that has never had, prior to Bob Mueller and his team, not been enforced. It was like people were fine, slap on their hand, you need to register. But that's the law on which they came after General Flynn, that he was working with Turkey and didn't register as a foreign agent. There are gobs of people in D.C. who do the very same thing, including the Podesta brothers, who had nothing happen to them when they had failed to register as foreign agents of Russia, could I add. But, you know, Paul Manafort was charged with that as well and is in prison paying dearly for his whatever crimes he may have committed as a businessman. But part of it was that they charged him as not filing as a foreign agent, not registering. And meanwhile, the Podesta brothers were in the same enterprise with Manafort, and nothing ever happened to them. My point is, they used this to come after Maria Butina, who they had asked Patrick Byrne to get involved with. I guess he had met her before. He has done work for the FBI before at various times in our country. I think twice before he's interceded on different things. So he has kind of a security clearance that's not a highest security clearance, but somewhat of a security clearance. And he reported to them when he met Maria because he needs to do that as part of the law, as a person who has that, because he's an honest person, unlike so many other. So when they found out that he was interacting with Maria, they encouraged him to go ahead, and then they asked him to get her to interject herself. First, it was the Cruz campaign and the can't recall the other campaign, but it was then, of course, finally everything else was dropped, and it was the Trump campaign. And then Patrick began to wonder about that. It didn't seem right to him. It seemed strange. So I want you to just hear a minute and a half of part of his testimony to Chris Cuomo. He was on with Martha McCallum last week, Fox Business. You can look it up, and I encourage you to do that and listen to his whole testimony. But here's a bit of what he said to Chris.
In 2015-16, I took some requests from the FBI, and it's the only way, Tom, I want to say that. It's men in black, because they're not the bad guys here. You'll understand. They're not the problem here. They passed a request to me from someone up above to do some stuff for about 2015-2016. I never know who it was. Last summer, watching television, watching Congress rip apart some people, I put some details together, and I figured out who had sent me the request. The man's name was Peter Strzok.
How do you know that?
Does that mean anything? Oh, it's already been confirmed to me. It's already been confirmed they came from Peter Strzok.
By whom?
More recent. By federal authorities.
Because we haven't heard anything from the government.
Chris, I'm not in the kindergarten business. If we're in the kindergarten business, if I'm here trying to convince you guys this happened, that's not the business. I'm not in the convincing business. I'm in the business of Warren Buffett told me I have to come forward. He said, you let the feds do their work. You have to come forward with what you know to the American people. So I'm coming forward.
Okay.
I'm not in the convincing business. I'm in the, I will do everyone a favor, open the door and let you know what happened business if you want.
All right. Of course, he goes on to tell a lot of things. And I'm going to see if I can give you, I know I can give you some information that you might not have from other sources about this, because it is very complex. And of course, Patrick then, when he saw that Bob Barr, how he was handling the Justice Department, that's when Patrick went to the Justice Department to tell everything that he knew. And that's when my impression is, that's one of the reasons we haven't had the Inspector General's report on all this Russian collusion business, is because people like Patrick, not just Patrick, but others have come forward to tell what they know about what happened. And Patrick repeatedly talks about how this came from above, higher than the FBI, higher than the FBI. And I want to remind you, I've not heard him say the name Obama yet in an interview, but this all occurred under the Obama Justice Department. It did. It happened under Loretta Lynch. It happened under Barack Obama. And so just keep that in mind as I share this with you. All right. So he says that when he went to the DOJ, they questioned him for 7 hours. And his going public is not something that the DOJ sanctioned. He was counseled by Warren Buffett that he needs to go forward. He is concerned for his safety. He was offered $10 billion to keep silent from somebody. We have no idea who, but $10 billion to stay silent about this. Instead, he resigned last week and came forward, and now he's talking. So here's the interesting thing. When Patrick came forward to the Justice Department, immediately, Maria Butina was moved from isolation in prison to a safer white-collar facility. So that's just a notable fact that took place. And then some are speculating, and I don't know why you wouldn't speculate this, that Bob Mueller wanted to silence Maria Butina, and that's why she was kept in solitary confinement, so that she couldn't talk. And because her crimes are not that great. I mean, look, not registering as a foreign agent is not a major crime. It's against the law, and it shouldn't be done. But because they haven't enforced it in the past, what's with this? You have to ask yourself, well, you know what's with this. So also, as I alluded to, some very significant and exculpatory Brady material was intentionally withheld from Ms. Butina's defense team. So what's going on with that? That the Mueller team would withhold evidence that could help her in her defense. So some that observe all four of Patrick's interviews said that everything he said, and he's not articulate, he really isn't, but all of the four interviews he gave with these various networks were consistent. The facts were consistent. He may have told them differently, but he didn't change a fact here or there. It was all very consistent. In 2015, according to what I'm reading, he became suspicious of the FBI motives because he warned FBI officials of a potential that his efforts, his reputation, and those who trust him might result in Butina gaining entry into campaign confidences. The FBI responded that that's exactly what the intent was. People high up wanted Ms. Butina to gain deep access into the Trump campaign. And the bottom line on this is that Ms. Butina, because of her connection to Russian oligarchs, I mean, she's not, you know, her hands are not, it's not that her motives are great. I'm not saying that. And so she would be a perfect person for the deep state to use to infiltrate into the Trump campaign and then say, see, aha, she was working inside the Trump campaign. She was seen with Don Jr., by the way. Someone did set up a meeting with her with Don Jr. And remember that they sent that Russian attorney to Trump Tower to meet with Don? That was set up by our British operatives who were helping our deep state set Donald Trump up. It's a really sorry story. I guess that's the kindest thing I could say about it. Let me go on. And they told Patrick that they were also investigating Hillary Clinton's campaign. But the truth is that Mrs. Clinton was publicly exonerated, and that was the end of anything, any investigation into whatever they might have claimed they were investigating. And I have so much to say about that that I've been saving for you because there's just so much news. And so Patrick said that FBI agents were apologetic about the request that they made to him and specifically mentioned that their instructions were coming from three principal FBI officials. Byrne described them as X, Y, and Z. Later, he identified FBI Director James Comey as Z. In the interview with Martha McCollum, he named James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Bill Priestap, John Carlin, who's with DOJ, currently, and Peter Strzok. He said his specific instructions were coming from Special Agent Peter Strzok. I'm thinking that that's probably the most important parts of that story that you need, that I'm hoping that you will remember. I got to tell you this part. In 2018, Patrick Byrne's company, Overstock, came under investigation by the SEC. Now, 2018 is just the time when, let me just read this from, I'm reading from Sundance, who I often quote. He's a national security expert. I don't know him personally, but he writes about a lot of things. This is his speculation. He said, I'm sure it is just a coincidence about FBI Special Agent Peter Strzok's wife, Melissa Hodgman, happening to be the associate director of the SEC Enforcement Division, who happened to be leading the SEC investigation of Peter Byrne's company. So the wife of the FBI agent who was directing Patrick Byrne in the sketchy FBI operation targeting Donald Trump just happens to open an investigation of Byrne shortly after the corrupt FBI operation containing her husband first hit the headlines in early 2018. So the investigation hits the headlines, and then the wife of Peter Strzok opens, and her capacity at the FEC opens up an investigation of Overstock. And so you know that can't end well. You know that has to be not a coincidence. And so that's just part of that story that I wanted to tell you this morning, but that's not all of it. I don't think I even got into this last week, and I'm not going to have time to go into it in great detail. But I just want to tell you that we are learning more and more about Mrs. Clinton's scandalous email situation, and really, you could say, treacherous, treasonous. We know that the young man who was given immunity, who bleached, bitted, and destroyed her email, transferred all of them to an email address connected to China. And all of Mrs. Clinton's email were forwarded to this email address that had its residence in China. All but, I think, six or seven of her email. Now we're finding all the facts surrounding what happened with the two attorneys that were representing Mrs. Clinton and the deal that they got, the immunity deal that they got. It's shocking. It's unbelievable what the FBI did. I can hardly believe, and the Justice Department under Obama. We'll come back with that in a second, because I think I need to dwell on that just a little bit more. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it take for you to compromise your principles? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Recently, I heard a statement that went like this. I don't think principles matter if you can't get elected. Principles form the core of who you are. Principles form the foundation of a civil society. George Washington, in his farewell address, identified religion and morality as indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, George Washington said. It makes me think of a scripture. What would it profit a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? What would it profit a candidate to gain an election but lose his principles?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Pastor Jim Scudder, Jr. for In Grace Radio. We're excited to announce that we're now on American Family Radio every Sunday morning at 8:30 Central Time. You'll want to join us for In Grace because we're going to open up the Word of God, preach it, and teach it, and we're going to bring you some pretty interesting programming from the Grand Canyon to Under the Water in Key Largo, even the Ark in Northern Kentucky. Join us this Sunday at 8:30.
Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Christian parents are on the hook today because they have to identify the threats to the value system that's being taught to their children in public schools. And their job is to protect their kids from these influences.
Tune in for Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, weekdays at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. on American Family Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program. God's blessings to you all.
Brian Fisher with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We're familiar with the problems in Baltimore. It's a city that is overrun with rats and has sky-high rates of murder and poverty. But the problem in Baltimore is not rats, it's absentee fathers. 87% to 89% of African-American children in the city are growing up without a dad in the home. These kids don't know what it's like to have a father. They have no idea what a stable marriage looks like. What Baltimore needs is more fathers in the home raising their sons to maturity. I've tried to make a modest contribution to solving the fatherhood problem with the Boy to Man book, designed for fathers of 12-year-old boys to use with their sons. If you know the father of a young boy, consider giving a copy of this book to him as a gift. You won't regret it, and neither will he. Order a copy today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. U.S. and Taliban negotiators are reportedly nearing a deal, requiring the departure of most American forces still in Afghanistan. On Friday, though, a Taliban suicide bomber targeted U.S. forces outside Bagram Air Force Base near Kabul. Clearly, the Taliban want the world and most especially the Afghans they are determined to enslave once again to understand that the United States is being subjected to ignominious defeat at their hands. Under present circumstances, withdrawal amounts to surrender. Fortunately, Senator Lindsey Graham is urging the president not to go there. In comments Sunday, the Senate Judiciary Chairman warned Mr. Trump against repeating the disastrous mistake Barack Obama made by abandoning Iraq. He's right. We need serving and retired special operators and intelligence personnel in Afghanistan to protect us against the jihadist threat that will massively metastasize if Sharia supremacists can once again operate there with impunity. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, I think that medicalizing politics has three very dire consequences. The first is that it stigmatizes the mentally ill. I've known thousands of patients. Almost all of them have been well-behaved, well-mannered, good people. Trump is none of these. Lumping the mentally ill with Trump is a terrible insult to the mentally ill, and they have enough problems and stigma as it is. The second issue is that calling Trump crazy hides the fact that we're crazy for having elected him, and even crazier for allowing his crazy policies to persist. Trump is as destructive a person in this century as Hitler, Stalin, and Mao were in the last century. He may be responsible for many more million deaths than they were. he needs to be contained, but he needs to be contained by attacking his policies, not his person. It's crazy for us to be destroying the climate our children will live in. It's crazy to be giving tax cuts to the rich that will add trillions of dollars to the debt our children will have to pay. It's crazy to be destroying our democracy by claiming that the press and the courts are the enemy of the people. We have to face these policies, not Trump's person. Now, it's absolutely impossible. You can bet the House that the Congress, that Pence, that the cabinet will never, ever remove Trump on grounds of mental unfitness. That will never happen. Discussing the issue in psychological name-calling terms distracts us from getting out the vote. Well, the problem is that the diagnoses offered have been amateurish. They don't apply to Trump. They will never get Trump out of office. And I'm worried that in dealing with the psychological motivations and the inaccurate psychiatric diagnoses, we lose the focus on getting out the vote. And that's much more important at this point.
All right. So that's the voice of psychiatrist Alan Francis, formerly of Duke University, professor emeritus of psychiatry and behavioral sciences. So if you wonder why your kids are messed up, I mean, even just listening to him, his comments were so convoluted. The outrageous part I'll get to in a second, the most outrageous, but it was all outrageous. He goes into, we must get out the vote. He's doing a political speech, and he's yet doing it in the guise of his professional qualifications that would allow him to declare President Trump crazy. But then he talks about his policies that just he doesn't happen to agree with. So it's a political statement couched in some psychiatric evaluation. And the worst, the most ridiculous thing, which shows you to me, illustrates to me that this psychiatrist is unhinged himself, is to say that President Trump will kill millions more than Hitler, Stalin, and Mao? That is just untethered from reality. Mao starved some 20 million of his own people, starved them on purpose. Stalin was an absolutely wicked man who did the same. Murdered his own wife, murdered his son. And yet President Trump is equivalent to that. A Hitler. Do I need to describe what Hitler did? So President Trump is going to kill as many people as they all did. So I just say, think twice before you write that check to where it is your child is going to school, because these are the kinds of people that are poisoning their minds. And the second point I'd like to make before I move on from that is, if you wonder why your friends and neighbors are so hostile to you for voting for President Trump, just think about the effect of listening to CNN and that kind of discussion day after day. I just played you a little bit earlier what Bret Stephens talked about, Trump's mental health on CNN. This is the steady stream that they get. It is a very effective, hate-filled propaganda. And it's why half of our country hates the other half. And I don't think it's the Trump people that hate the people that don't support Trump. I don't see the hate coming from them. So anyway, and also, by the way, that reference to Patrick Byrne, or that piece by Sundance that talks about, Pat analyzes his appearances on these four different shows and talks about the situation. We're going to put that on our Facebook page so that you can get it. It's in Conservative Treehouse. So just wanted you to know that. I want to go back to this story. All right, so more evidence, more things we're learning about Mrs. Clinton's email. I mean, look, I think the problem is that people say email. We all do email. It seems so innocuous. It seems so friendly. But it is not friendly. Mrs. Clinton was the Secretary of State, having access to the highest secrets this nation has. She corresponded with the President of the United States, who willingly corresponded with her illegally on a server that was not sanctioned by the government and became poisoned. In fact, everything that she wrote was accessed by the Chinese because of the young guy that was handling her server. Now, I don't know, you know, if she knew about that or even cared. I really don't know. But it's the truth. So that America's secrets were a free flow for the Chinese government, who we're now grappling with in so many different ways and have been for decades. Mrs. Clinton, obviously not too concerned about that. So now you remember when her two, look, this is where it gets really interesting. Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson were the two names of the women who were the attorneys, quote unquote, for Mrs. Clinton. When she went for that FBI interview, remember that famous moment the FBI was allegedly going to interview her? They came as her attorneys. Problem is, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, we now know, were the ones who oversaw what Mrs. Clinton did with her email, the illegal use of her email, setting up the server. They knew all about it. They expedited it. They also were involved in covering it up when it first was revealed. And now suddenly, they are her defense attorneys, appearing with her in this private interrogation by the FBI. They are the attorneys. But here is where it gets even worse. They oversaw the destruction of evidence, and yet they're defending her. They're supposed to be her legal counsel. Here's where it gets worse, and that is that the FBI gave them immunity. And now we're learning more about those immunities. The agreement with the Obama DOJ and FBI under Comey was that Mills and Samuelson would turn over the computers to them, but stipulated that they weren't turning over custody and control of the computers, which, according to what I'm reading here, is ridiculous. It's impossible to turn something over physically and not give custody or control. So the agreements were extremely flawed, and whoever signed off on them should be investigated and probably prosecuted. It's clear that the purpose of this clause was to make the arguably illegal activities of Mills and Samuelson out of the reach of FOIA. In other words, withheld from the public. So here's what the FBI gave Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson. They got immunity from potential violations of the Federal Records Act, the Classified Information Act, the Espionage Act. And by the way, no one has ever gotten immunity from the Espionage Act. Immunity is generally for lesser crimes. Espionage is a pretty serious crime, but they got immunity from it. So if Mills and Samuelson were charged and convicted of every crime from which they received immunity, they would be potentially subject to 28 years in jail each. So Mills and Samuelson gave the computers over to the FBI. They limited the FBI's investigation. The FBI agreed to limit the method by which the emails investigated would be obtained, the scope of files which would be investigated, the time frame parameters for investigated emails. In other words, the FBI agreed in the immunity contracts not to do a full investigation of the Clinton email. And to make matters worse, per the immunity agreements, the FBI agreed to destroy the computers that had the backup emails. Congressman Jim Jordan mentioned this during the Mueller hearings recently, that the FBI used BleachBit to purge the server so the information could never be accessed in the future, and used hammers. I know about all the destruction of these computers. I didn't know until I read this article that the FBI actually did that. They used hammers to smash the cell phones involved. In other words, the FBI and DOJ, the Obama FBI and Obama DOJ, participated in the destruction of evidence. In effect, this constitutes a conspiracy between the Obama DOJ under Loretta Lynch and the Comey-led FBI to cover up Clinton's crimes. And there, right after that, that's when FBI Director Comey came out publicly, held a press conference exonerating Hillary Clinton. Remember that? Behind the scenes, look what they were doing. It's just shocking. And so that's an article by Deborah Weiss. We'll put it on our Facebook page. It's New Evidence Unveils Disturbing Facts About Hillary's Email Scandal. All right. I want to now turn to a different story. By the way, I think the Inspector General's report, as I said earlier, I think has been delayed because we're just learning massive amounts of damning information. I don't know if justice will ever be done. I don't know. I pray for that. I think we must have justice. People need that. They need to know that there is a punishment. It's good for all of us, the guilty and the innocent. Again, as I've said many times, it restores sanity to have lines. You went over the line, and this is the punishment. You can't do this. And so I'm hoping and praying that Attorney General Barr will be firm and not lenient, and that there has to be some retribution for the crimes that were committed under the Obama years and under the leadership of Comey and Mueller. It's just disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And could I say CIA John Brennan? I want to change the subject because this is also important. Rand Paul had another surgery just last a couple of weeks ago because his lung had gotten infected. And he did an interview last week with Fox and Friends, and I'm not sure you heard it because I don't think he went on any other networks. And this is, you know, the updated story about what happened with his neighbor. Let's listen in his own words to what he said.
I'd been getting better for a long time, but I had worsening pulmonary symptoms, and then the x-rays and the CAT scan was showing that the damaged area of the lung was actually showing up in a larger fashion and growing. And the decision was made that the only way to get to the bottom of it, to see exactly what the problem was and to fix it, was to remove part of the lung. Fortunately, it was a chronic infection and a damaged part of the lung that wasn't getting air and wasn't getting good circulation. And so sometimes antibiotics just don't work for something like that. But my hope is that it's a cure now to have that part of the lung removed. And I'm about a week and a half out, and I'm getting a little stronger each day. I still feel like I've been in an auto wreck, but I'm getting better.
It was very scary again for me to see Rand developing more symptoms this summer. So when the surgeon walked out and said that they were able to do a wedge resection, and after, you know, an hour and a half versus the longer surgery we were worried about, we were just really grateful that they think that he's going to be fine and he's going to be able to move on from this. But yeah, it's been really hard to see Rand struggle through this.
Well, I'm a avid exerciser. I walk or ride a bike every day pretty much of the week.
I'm
going to
interrupt
Washington
that because I want you to hear the next part. The next part, remember, he was attacked by his neighbor when he was riding his lawnmower. And do you remember that we were told that it's because of a dispute over yard clippings? And they set the record straight last week. Let's listen to clip two.
Well, and see, I think this is the narrative that the left is bringing to us. Everything is President Trump's fault. And so all the rhetoric, they say, oh, it's all violence and the whole world is President Trump's fault. And yet the man who attacked me was known on the Internet. His social media postings were violent. He talked about doing violence to the president. So, that's completely ignored because the media wanted to develop a narrative. I mean, their whole narrative that it was an altercation or a fight. There was no fight. I had my back turned with noise cancellation headphones on, and I was attacked and six of my ribs broken before I saw the attacker. In fact, I never saw the attacker till after the attack was over. And people want to make it out, oh, it was just this little dispute. But a lot of that came from the other side trying to get a lesser sentence, you know, so they wanted to downplay what it was. And in reality, I think violence is complicated, and there are many reasons why people attack you, but ultimately, you know, I was very severely injured. Yeah. I'm still suffering from it 2 years later.
We were very disturbed by the fact that many in the media continue to just take his lawyer's word for it when the attacker admitted in court, and he's admitted multiple times, he hasn't spoken to Rand in over 10 years. We never had any dispute for them. I always waved when I saw him very occasionally in the neighborhood. So we had no idea that this person harbored any animus toward us at all.
Does he still
any
live
animosity
next door?
Toward Rand or hatred?
Frankly, both Kelly and I think it should have probably just been tried here locally. I think in a local court where they're used to dealing with violent people often get several years in prison for this. Recently, you know, a Democrat staffer broke into offices in the Senate, got my name, McConnell's name, and released it to the public and encouraged violence against us. So it had breaking and entering.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because we're running out of time. He also goes on to say that the judge was assigned to that case from another district and was predisposed to the outcome. How much of this is going to happen? Senator Rand Paul, can you believe this story? Congressman Steve Scalise, I think of all the harm that's being done by the left to conservatives, it's disgraceful. It has to stop. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.